As a farmer or rancher, you know that agricultural land is not like other real estate. We know that too. Come see the experts in agriculture, American Ag Credit. Whether you're buying property, building, or making improvements, American Ag Credit is here to help with fixed rates, variable rates, long and short-term loans. Unique solutions tailored to your unique needs. Visit us online at agloan.com. American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
Good morning, Napa. This is Tia Butts, and you're listening to Farmers Fresh Hour. I'm here with Greg Cole.
Good morning, Napa.
And Kara May.
Good morning, Napa.
Fantastic. And so we are here to talk to you a little bit about all the stories behind the Napa Farmers Market. And we want to thank our sponsor, American Ag Credit, Money for Agriculture. Hey, it's good to be back.
We've missed you.
Welcome Aww. Back, Tia.
Thank you. That's very nice. I've missed the show.
Well,
so I've missed you guys.
The station is still here, and we're still standing. So
awesome.
It's
I
exciting.
Love it. And Halloween is just around the corner, so, you know.
Yay!
And, you know, you all cannot see what is happening right now in the studio. Although, if you look at our Farmers Market feed on Instagram, perhaps you'll see some of the evidence
too.
Here and on Facebook. But Bok Bok is completely decked out, as is Kara May.
Yes.
I mean, it's like a party going on
it
in
is.
Here in the studio.
It's spooky.
It's spooktacular.
Spectacular. Yes, exactly. So we're all, you know, we're no tricks and all treats today. And we're going to be welcoming two guests who might sound a little spooky, but they're offering products and services that we're sure you'll die for.
Uh-huh. We've missed your
I've
humor,
got more
Tia.
People. I've got more.
You'll
just
be here
wait.
All day.
So our first guest this morning is going to be the Chaga Company, the Chaga Mushroom Company, which is a really interesting product. I don't know if they're new to the market.
Yes, and it's mushroom tea.
Yes, mushroom tea and tinctures. And there's one other thing that they make too, hot chocolate. I believe, of some kind, with the Chaga
We will
mushrooms.
Definitely find out right. more.
We're going to find out more.
So Gavin Escalar from the Chaga Company is going to be on to talk to us about his product. And I haven't tried it yet. And it is new at the market. And it's a healthy beverage that's full of antioxidants and all kinds of magical things like mushrooms tend to have.
Exactly.
But one of the ingredients was turkey tail. And I thought, man, mushrooms and turkey. What is a turkey tail?
Well, that made me even more excited for the Halloween show when
right?
I read that either. You know, also
there's a
because
turkey tail in here.
Huh? What is that?
But that's a mushroom.
It's a kind of
it's
mushroom.
Not, it's a vegan turkey tail.
It is a vegan turkey tail or mushroom that grows on the side of a tree. But I had never heard of a turkey tail mushroom before. So
well, I feel better because neither have I. But you know, I'm no chef, so
I'm not sure we use it in culinary circles. It's perhaps you know people who make these. Herbal remedies, supplements, whatever they are, that use it.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we can't wait to talk to him. And then the other person that's going to be coming on today is going to be Dan Menzel, the owner of Napa Knives.
Ring,
you can't,
ring,
you, yeah,
ring,
yeah.
Ring.
I really wanted a knife sound effect. I actually looked at those yesterday, but I couldn't get here to the station in time to get that all taken care of.
One of the very first markets I worked, I was busy setting up the chef demonstration stage, and I looked up across the crowd. And there was a guy walking through with a big hatchet over his shoulder. And I thought, this is not good. Well, he was headed to Dan's stall.
So he wasn't swinging it.
Just was such a
that would
sort
have been
of,
way more alarming.
It would have been it would have fit in around Halloween. But I just looked up. It's like something's wrong with that picture there. There's a guy with a big hatchet.
Yeah, it's a little menacing when you see someone walking into the market.
It wasn't
with
a little
with
small
axe.
It was a big one. And so anyway, but Dan
he
is
had
an
axe to
guy.
Grind.
He did.
Oh my goodness.
He had an axe and Dan ground it for him. So, and Dan has got a really interesting sort of history in the valley. He's been a longtime restaurateur and caterer. He opened Red Rock on Lincoln Avenue many, many years ago. Great burgers. Then he branched into the backdoor barbecue and did amazing tri-tips and great barbecued items and fed us for many, many years. Sold his restaurant to a longtime employee. And now he has started sharpening knives,
I
guess,
I love
as a
it.
Retirement
I didn't know that
job.
History, so that's
wow.
interesting
Yeah, Dan's
to me.
A great
what a cool
guy.
Story.
He's been cooking in the valley for longer than I have, and that's a long time.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, Kara May is also here and is going to be telling us about the Napa Give Guide later.
That's right.
We'll get into that. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what's happening for our Halloween haunted market that's coming up?
Sure. We have so much going on at the Napa Farmers Market. As always, we are going to be there Saturday and Tuesday in the South Napa Century Center next to the movie parking lot. We're there from 8:30 to a.m. to 1 p.m. And before we talk about this week's haunted market, I just want to say thank you to our community for coming out for food days.
Oh,
we had
yes,
two,
absolutely.
Yes, applause for that.
Lots of applause for
two
that.
Two snaps in a Z formation. We had two wonderful days. Saturday, we had lots of folks donate to our fresh food drive.
Absolutely.
And if you want to see the literal laundry list of the wonderful produce that was donated to the Napa Food Bank, you can go to NapaFarmersMarket.org and sign up for our newsletter. And on Monday, we're going to put out a full report on everything. And one of the coolest things about food days on Saturday was we actually collected $150 in cash, and our market manager, Charlotte, was able to spend that at the market and buy even more produce. So
we love that.
Folks know that they can continue to donate to us every market day at the education station, whether they want to buy a little extra and drop it off or they want to give us some cash. It'll make a big difference. And then on Tuesday, we had a wonderful, magical day with school field trips. So we had kindergartners, second graders, middle schoolers. It was really great. So we thank the community for coming out. And we're just nonstop with events at the farmers market. So this week coming up, I am so excited. It's finally here. Our haunted market is going to happen on Saturday, October 27th, and also on Tuesday, October 30th. So everything's going to be a little extra spooky. We are going to have cute decorations. We are going to have spooky story time at 9:30 and spookier story time at 10:30. So two chances to catch story time at the education station. And at 10 a.m., right before the chef demo, we are going to have the kids costume contest judging. So kids of all ages are welcome to come down. We have wonderful prizes for them. And another fun contest we're going to have is our customers can vote for their favorite vendor in costume. So come on down. Cast your vote for your favorite vendor and costume. And also, we are going to have, once again, we're bringing it back. Our harvest of the month is persimmons. So we're going to be doing a persimmons tasting and taste test at the education station at 11. And persimmons are a wonderful Halloween treat. We know that there's a lot of extra sugar floating around everywhere. But persimmons are sweet. And, you know, some folks are intimidated by them because they may have eaten the ones that were meant for baking, and those aren't necessarily as delicious as the ones that are meant for eating. So we want you to come on down, and we have Fuyu persimmons that are an excellent source of fiber. They're high in vitamins A and C, and they're just they taste like fall in your mouth. So
wonderful.
Come on down.
That sounds delicious.
It is the most beautiful tree in the world, I think, the persimmon tree.
They are gorgeous.
I grew up in Southern California. I had never seen one. And I moved here years ago. I was working at Demi and Chandon, and every night or every day I'd walk back to my car in the employee parking lot. And all of a sudden, at the end of fall, there was this tree that I had parked near all year. And the leaves had all fallen down, and it was just covered with these bright orange fruits. It's a miracle. It just is so beautiful. And I had never seen a persimmon tree till I moved to Napa.
They're gorgeous. They are gorgeous.
Well, one of our regular volunteers, Herb, who's a great guy, he actually looks like he whacked off one of his persimmon tree branches and just brought it in with all of the persimmons, and he donated some of them to our food drive. So
that's awesome.
We thank him for that.
No, we love that. Thank you so much.
And the Fuyu persimmons could be used like an apple in any kind of salad or, you know, kind of dish like that. They're so good, and they're not to be frightened. Don't be afraid of them. Just treat them like you would an apple.
Yes.
You should peel them because the skin is a little bit chewy.
Oh,
but they're just amazing.
That's a good
tip. They're just
bring a peeler to
they just have great flavor and crisp, and they're just great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love a good persimmon
and
salad.
I can't remember the other variety what it's called because I never ever use it, but the more oval shaped one is it's called a custard apple it's that variety, and it has to be very, very soft. And then it's used in bacon, like persimmon bread or persimmon cookies. And it's great for that, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's not the same, it's not as versatile as the fuyu, yeah, which is the Japanese variety of persimmons.
Mm. Awesome. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the magical medicinal world of mushrooms. So hang tight. We'll be back.
You're a farmer or rancher. Your success depends on the weather, which means certain things are out of your control, such as rain, hail, fire, crop failure, and other unforeseen conditions. But you have a business to run. Protect yourself and insure your risk with American Ag Credit, so you can rest easy knowing that we'll be there for you no matter what tomorrow brings. American Ag Credit. Money for agriculture.
Welcome back to Farmers Fresh Hour. I'm Tia Butts with Greg Cole.
Yes. Hello. Hi, Tia.
I'm like, are you here, Greg?
I'm here.
And Kara May is here as well. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And I believe we have Mr. Gavin Escolar, the founder of the Chaga Company, on the line. Gavin?
Yes. Hi. Hello, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Gavin.
Hello, Gavin.
Hey. We're doing... How are you guys doing? How is your morning?
Oh, my gosh. It's going great. We're talking all things market and Halloween. We were just discussing persimmons, and we were touching on the fact that one of your mushrooms is called turkey tail, which we had never heard of that before.
Yes, it's like vegan turkey tail, though, right?
Yes, it is. It's actually, it's a really beautiful mushroom. It's really pretty. If you Google it, they have like really nice gyrations of color, and it actually grows locally in Napa, too.
Oh, who knew? Oh, that's awesome. Well,
super local.
Before we get into that, you know, tell us a little bit about your product and actually maybe start with how you decided to start this company and tell us what is Chaga.
Oh, well, first of all, I discovered Chaga when I was staying in Alaska for quite some time. And I was... You know, there's a lot of folk medicines that's coming around. It was just a hearsay, and they said, oh, try this chaga mushroom. And I'm like, okay, what does it do? And then they said, they rattled off all the benefits of it on how it's become like a fashionable mushroom that has the highest amount of antioxidants and whatnot. And I was a true skeptic, actually, when I was in Alaska. And when I tried it, it really transformed me and changed my life. So I ran a coffee shop in Alaska that served chaga over there and really learned and developed the system and found good working relationships with people over there, foraging it the right way and really getting a quality product. And then winter came along in Alaska and I figured, you know, I am from the Bay Area and this winter I'm kind of done for. So I moved back over here and started the Chaga Company here in San Francisco.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
I don't know if I could handle winter in Alaska either. It sounds scary.
No. No. It's entertaining at first, you know, until like when the 2 feet of snow comes in.
Wow. Hey. Yeah. The novelty wears off quickly, I'm
and
sure.
And it's dark all day.
And it's dark
like
all day,
2 too. 2 hours of sunlight or something.
Wow.
Yes. And then in the northern part where we actually get our chaga from, it's dark for 20 days. Great.
Wow, that's incredible. So Gavin, explain, because we don't have, you know, we're radio and not television, can you kind of describe what this mushroom looks like? I got a good look at it at the farmer's market last weekend, but yes. Maybe describe it.
Okay, so first of all, it doesn't look like a typical mushroom.
Right, it kind of looked like bark to me.
Yes, it's like this. It's this black, almost tumor-looking like on a white paper birch tree, because that's where chaga grows on. It's these white paper birch trees, and it's black, and it comes in small to like all the way. If chaga grows on a birch tree for a number of years, it does tend to get bigger. But yeah, it's black, and it looks like it's a burnt cork matter bark looking thing that grows on the side of a tree. And then once you actually cut it up, it has like this amazing caramel golden look inside.
Really interesting. So, yeah, it's really fascinating. Do you know why it grows on the birch tree? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so the thing is that chaga is one of those, it's like a mushroom. It grows on, it's a mushroom that specifically grows on birch trees, chaga mushrooms are. And it's the mushroom that actually, it's really interesting because it needs to be in like super desolate environment in order for it to actually have all the betulic acids and the polysaccharides and all of these antioxidants, because it needs that fight between nature and the birch tree and the mushroom.
Wow.
So
sounds like
there is
epic.
Yeah.
And those are some of and we want those things, right? Because that's what gives the chaga its medicinal benefits for us, correct?
Correct. The more desolate the climate, there's no moisture in the air for the chaga mushroom to pull out its nutrients from. So it has to take its nutrients from the white paper birch tree. And, of course, the birch tree want to keep its nutrients. And that fight between each other creates all of those antioxidants.
Wow, it sounds like Game of Thrones mushroom style, right?
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Gavin, who were the first to sort of harness these beneficial, you know, trace elements? Was it the Native Americans or the Alaskan Indians, or did it come from Asia, or where did this sort of? Okay. I mean, I know that in Argentina and in the South America we have mate, which is derived from a plant, and this is, sounds like kind of a similar, you know, nutritional rich, antioxidant rich liquid, or becomes a liquid after you make a tea or you process it. But where did this kind of idea come from?
So the first evidence of a chaga being used as an herbal medicine was actually 5,300 years ago, called Otzi the Iceman used chaga as an herbal medicine.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
That is.
Yes. And then from then on, like 400 years ago, the Russians and the Siberians discovered chaga, and they incorporate chaga in their folk medicine. And then 60 years ago, the Finns start using chaga as a coffee substitute. Like, so that's where the whole chaga tea came about. So what we do at the Chaga Company is we get the chaga from Alaska, and we are starting to get some chaga right now, too, in Mount Everest in Nepal. We discovered that there's chaga over there, and we're entertaining the possibility of getting that over there, too, as well. So what we do is, like, from the mushroom, we have people who forage it. Then it gets this first process in there to ensure its freshness, and it goes down here to San Francisco, and then we process it even further to turn it into, like, a very fine powder and processed liquid, and then after that, either it becomes the powder, the tinctures, or the elixirs, and we also have, our teas. And by the way, we have a yerba mate tea with chaga at the Chaga Company. You should check it out.
Double your pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would never die. You'd live forever.
That would be so scary.
Yeah.
The Fountain of Youth, we've just discovered it, people.
Mm-hmm. Come on down to the Farmer's Market.
Farmer's Market. Please experience it, because there's a lot of people. You know what I love about the Napa Valley Farmer's Market is when people try it, I encourage people to do their own research about it and see if it will benefit them. And if it does, try it out. We have samples for you. You know, we incorporate it, and I think it's the fall season and the winter season's coming, so we're going to be heavily doing a lot of hot teas and hot chocolate. That's our thing right now.
Right, and we're entering cold and flu season, so we want to be prepared for that.
Exactly. And Gavin,
you know,
although we want everyone to try it, as a health professional, I'm curious, are there any negative side effects associated with using chaga, or anyone that has, or like any pre-existing conditions that folks shouldn't use it? Like, I know there's some things that, you know, pregnant women shouldn't use because of the protecting the unborn baby.
Uh-huh. So for me, it's just like, just take your regular precautionary thing. I did have one instance that somebody tried chaga right after surgery. The thing is that, you know, chaga is full of antioxidants. So what it does, it actually thins out the blood to a certain extent.
So maybe someone who's on blood thinners, it might not be such a great idea.
So it's best for you to check your medical professional about taking chaga if you're under surgery or pregnant and stuff like that. But as far as I'm concerned, I have not encountered anybody who even have an allergy to it, and the FDA did classify chaga as a food.
Interesting. Okay, good. So how much chaga would you recommend that someone consume daily?
Oh, the good thing about chaga is so full of antioxidants that you only need a quarter of a teaspoon. So we have this chaga elixir blend that is in the form of a test tube that you could carry with you, and that's a 30-day supply.
Wow. In a test tube.
Yeah. So, you know, just put it, what a lot of people do, they just put it in their regular coffee or their regular tea, if you have your own collection of teas. And you know what I've been doing lately, because it's like the fall season, I'm experimenting like mulled wine with chaga.
Ooh, interesting.
And apple cider with chaga, like hot apple cider and stuff.
That sounds good. Now, I will say I did try several of the teas. I think I tasted through all of them at the market last Saturday. And
oh,
I
great.
Will, just for the listeners, if you haven't tried it yet, it really it didn't have much of an unusual flavor. I guess if you're worried like, oh, it's going to taste super earthy or...
Like mushrooms.
Like mushrooms, you know. Like it really, to your point, you know, maybe some caramely notes, but really the tea came through, the tea leaves came through more than the mushroom part of it.
Yes. So my philosophy for this is that, you know, teas are beverages, and what I want is not necessarily to like overwhelm people with the taste of the mushrooms. I just want them to incorporate the healthy antioxidants the chaga mushroom has. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a very lucky situation that I get, and fortunate situation that I get to consult like the best tea specialists in the country. And at the same time, I grew up in a tea family too as well. I'm part Chinese, and we have a tea shop in China. So I get to source, you know, I get an opportunity to learn more about it in an in-depth method, consult with people with the yin and yang, the energy relationship between the chaga and the teas and other stuff that we use to make sure that it's harmonious and synergetically delicious too, as well, and nutritious for you.
Very cool. Well, Gavin, will you be there on Saturday?
You know, Cliff will be there on Saturday, but I will partially be there on Saturday, too.
Okay, so. Well, just so you know, we are having a vendor costume contest for our haunted market. So, and I know that you have fabulous outfits, so the customers are going to be voting for their favorite vendor in costume. So I believe in you. I know you can come up with something great. And
yeah, Gavin, I've seen your Instagram, too. I think you can pull something fabulous off.
I think I can.
That's right. I mean, you came dressed as the handmaid, right? Once already to the market?
Yes.
that was just a regular
that
day.
That was pretty awesome.
That was a typical Saturday.
Exactly.
And actually,
exactly.
Gavin, you and I met that day because I was handing out roses next to you.
Oh, it was Mother's Day.
It was Mother's okay. Day. Yes.
Wonderful.
Well, before we let you go, again, yeah. Let's walk through some of the products that are available at the market. Again, there are yeah. several varieties of teas, and as yeah. you said, the tinctures, and what else?
Yeah. Okay, so we have four different kinds of teas, which is the sage mint tea for an herbal nighttime drink, the classic masala chai, we have our wonderful Earl Grey, and our fabulous jasmine green that can be served hot or iced, which is really lovely.
Mm.
We have our yerba mate and our hot chocolate, which comes from a single origin farm in Ecuador, and we use Madagascar vanilla. It's just very simple and vegan too as well. We have our apple cider based vinegar tinctures and our alcohol based power tincture too. And we also have our powdered mushroom blend elixir, the test tubes that I was talking to you guys about. That's the 30-day supply that you can put on your coffee and your tea or anything that touches hot, because you need that to open up the DNA structure of the mushroom for you to absorb all of its antioxidants. And we're actually premiering three things. We're going to do a subscription program too as well. We also have a bottled mushroom blend elixir that you could put in your refrigerator, and then just you could drink it as a shot. You could also put it with your wine at the end or anything cold or on your smoothies or food. So there's a whole range of products that we have at the Napa Valley Farmers Market. And please come. We would love to see you guys.
A lot of versatility. We love it. Is there a website that people can go to get more information?
Yes. It's www.thechagaco.com. And chaga is spelled C-H-A-G-A.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Gavin. This was really interesting. Really fascinating
stuff. Thank you so
much.
It's such
a fascinating.
To all you guys.
Yay.
Thank you, Gavin.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us this morning. Have a great day.
We look forward to seeing you at the market soon.
Yes. We'll see you Saturday.
Sounds great.
Bye, Gavin.
All right, so we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, it's going to be all about sharpening our knife skills, right?
Right.
We've got an axe to grind.
We've got an axe to grind.
With Dan Menzel.
More soon.
As a farmer or rancher, you know that agricultural land is not like other real estate. We know that, too. Come see the experts in agriculture. American Ag Credit. Whether you're buying property, building, or making improvements, American Ag Credit is here to help with fixed rates, variable rates, long and short-term loans. Unique solutions tailored to your unique needs. Visit us online at agloan.com. American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
Welcome back to Farmers Fresh Hour, brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture. We are going to be talking to our guest, Dan Menzel, in just a moment. But Greg, before we talk to Dan, did you want to talk a little bit about the chef demos?
Well, just real quickly, this coming Saturday at 10 o'clock, Chef Terry Letson from Fume Bistro will be making one of his restaurant brunch favorites. It's a Monte Cristo sandwich.
You might
say, what does a Monte Cristo have to do with the farmer's market? And that's what I said, too. But he's going to be using the delicious molasses. Yeah, that's right. Who cares? Sometimes you got to just go away from the fruits and vegetables. He's going to be using the delicious molasses brined ham from our friends at Contimo Provisions as the secret ingredient in his Monte Cristo. So he'll show you the technique. He'll talk about the history of the sandwich, sort of the American take on the croque monsieur. And the Croque Madame, but
two of my favorites.
He is going to be doing that, and then in 2 weeks, Rob Merrick is going to be on with us, and he has a book called 15-Minute Meals for First Responders. And Rob's a real interesting guy. There was a great article in the Napa Register about him and his book a couple weeks ago. So I encourage everybody to come out and visit our chef's demo Saturdays at 10.
Yeah, no, definitely. We always have good stuff going on there. So, you know, I'm sure you can agree with this, but a dull knife slows you down in the kitchen, right, Greg?
A dull knife is the worst the worst thing ever.
Yeah. So our next guest, who I believe is on the line with us, is at the Napa Farmers Market to make sure you're cooking like a pro at all times. Dan Menzel of Napa Knives. Hi, Dan.
Hi. This is Tia.
This is Tia, and you are here with Tia and Kara May and Greg Cole.
And hey, Dan, how are you?
Good, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. So Greg was touching on your history in Napa, which goes back quite a ways. I had no idea that you were part of Red Rock Cafe at one point.
He invented it.
I owned it and invented it. I was there for 39 years. 7 months and 21 days.
Not that you're counting.
I love that place.
I wasn't counting.
That's awesome. Well,
I used to take care of the restaurant's knives, and I'd sharpen them starting about maybe 12 or 13 years ago.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, it was just a painful process doing it by hand. And would need knives done, you know, my knives, we used them, you know, we're open 7 days a week, 11 hours a day. So, you know, after every 3 weeks or so, we'd have to at least touch them up. So I got pretty good at it, and I looked at it as kind of being a challenge to keep those knives sharp. And, you know, they're taken care of, but they're really used, I mean, every day. So, you know, I got pretty good at it, and then I sold the restaurant 4 or 5 years ago. So I thought, well, for a little retirement gig, I'd just sharpen knives. And it's, you know, it works out well. I enjoy the farmer's market. It's kind of like a old home week. You see people you haven't seen in years, and, you know, you make new friends, and, you know, the vendors are all very nice.
That's right. We build community around food at the Napa Farmer's Market, and we're happy to have you with us.
It's really
a pleasure. Yeah, yeah.
It's where old chefs go to. We don't go to
put
die.
You out to pasture.
We are old in the parking lot.
When as old chefs sell our restaurants, you know, one of the things that I miss the most is my clientele, and you know, visiting with my customers and hearing stories about their family, and so when we sold the restaurants, all of a sudden that was gone, And the farmer's market gives me a chance to run into these people and touch base and, you know, stay involved in the community. And that's, I think, probably the same for you. You get to see a lot of old customers who come and talk to you about the good old days at Red Rock and the amazing barbecue that you prepared for all those thousands of meals for all those years.
Yummy, yummy.
Yeah, I figure I was responsible for putting out about 2 million meals over 40 years.
Wow.
And, you know, but after a while, it just, well, you know, Greg, probably, you know, it's like one day, it's like, okay, that was it.
It's time for the younger ones to take over.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us your process. You were talking about how, you know, sharpening knives by hand is, you know, kind of laborious. So how do you do it now for those customers coming to the market?
I discovered a machine called the belt sander, and there are a couple of models of the belt sander that go fairly slowly so that they're going slower than the usual belt sander. And if it goes too fast, you can heat up the edge of the blade with the belt, so you have to be careful about that. And that's one downside of the belt sander is that it can heat up the blade. But you really, you know, after a while, you have to pretty much try it burning an edge of a blade because, you know, there are signs. It starts getting warm. You don't wear gloves. You just touch the edge, and when the edge starts getting warm, you dunk it in some water.
Sure, sure.
Or put it down and do something, you know, go to another knife. But, you know, the belt sander is just way faster. I know the first time I was doing my knives by hand, and, you know, each knife would take 4 or 5 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes.
Holy moly, well, 20 minutes.
when you have a restaurant, you don't have 20 minutes to sharpen a knife. You have 20 minutes to sharpen all your knives. So I got, you know, I got pretty good at this, and I took some tutorials with other knife sharpeners from different parts of the country and just learned. And, you know, and practice makes perfect. You know, you try things and then you test them. There are ways of testing an edge to make sure the knife is sharp. And if it's not sharp, you try something else. You try another technique. So after a while, you get a kind of a feel for what kind of steel the knife has. And, you know, if it's a $300 Japanese knife, you're not going to just wail on the thing. You're going to take some, you know, use a little finesse with putting an edge on and taking the burr off.
And that's something I was wondering. Do you specialize in sharpening one type of knife over another, like Japanese versus German, et cetera, or do you see all kinds of things come through at the market?
I see all kinds of things coming through from pristine German or Japanese expensive knives all the way down to some, you know, a $7 Walmart knife looks like it's been through the trash compactor or something that, you know, that's... what do they call those things? The garbage
disposal
grinder.
Yes.
Disposal, yeah. And I mean, it's shocking sometimes with the knives that come in, but, you know, that's all right. You know, a good knife can be a $12 knife.
So how often should we be sharpening our knives?
I always say a couple of times a year is a kind of a good, you know, rule of thumb. But, you know, in a restaurant situation or when if someone's cooking all day, 7 days a week, you know, that knife's going to get dull. But you can prolong the sharpness of the knife by stropping it.
Stropping it?
What does that mean? I'm, like, confused now.
Break it down.
Okay, yeah, strop. You know, the old barbers, you would strop their razors on leather belts.
Oh, okay. I can visualize that now.
Yeah, and you can take a piece of leather or an old belt, an old purse, an old pair of Levi's or whatever, and you don't even need to use any compound on it. Just go edge trailing. If you can, you know, you're not cutting into the leather or the fabric. You're dragging it across backwards.
Yeah, pulling it back almost.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm going to leave any of the knife skills to my partner, Bailey, so I don't injure myself. Right. I'd rather have her cook for me than go to Kaiser Hospital
with
Vallejo.
ER.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, really.
Well, and I think, sorry, go ahead.
Never catch a knife that's falling.
Right.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good tip. I hope everyone hears that. Exactly.
I had to remind my employees of this, and every now and then, especially after I'd sharpen a, you know, get a really good sharp edge on a knife, you know, one of my guys in the kitchen would say, "Hey, Dan, I cut the tip of my fingers off."
Oh,
oh, that's
boy.
Okay. I'd tell him it'll grow back.
Oh, jeez.
And he'd say, "Really? No, not really."
Yes, that's the hazard, I suppose, of a sharp knife.
Yeah.
You know, but Greg, maybe you can touch on this too, but, you know, what's a proper way to store knives? We're talking about handling knives right now,
right.
But maybe we should go over that. How do you handle knives? How do you store knives? How do you?
I have mine on a magnetic bar in the kitchen, like up against the wall. You don't want them in a drawer, just sort of loose, because the blades bump into each other. And so storing them,
they get knocked around.
Yeah, storing them flat or storing them. You know, there are, if you go to Shackford's, there's these beautiful little hard plastic little sleeves that they can go into. But having them sort of displayed on the wall, I like that, because when I travel, I'll buy a knife, you know, and it will remind me of a trip. When I was in Portugal, I got a little Portuguese paring knife, and it sits there on my wall. Or when I was in Spain, Toledo is famous for its steel, and I bought a set of knives in Toledo, Spain. I completely overpaid for them, I'm sure, but they're great knives. They're really sharp. So so who knows if I overpaid for them or not. But that steel from Toledo is really amazing. And then I have one of my French knives is an old knife from culinary school I got when I first enrolled in the Culinary Institute of America in 1981. So
wow, that's awesome.
And it's held
up well.
Just goes
to show how long it can last.
Yeah, right? They can. You know, I think what Dan does with his belt sounder, you want to avoid excessive grinding. A lot of or some commercial knife sharpeners will grind them on a wheel, and over time that just destroys the blade. Just disappears basically. And so, what Dan does with his belt sounder, it's more aggressive than an oil stone would be. But it's not like a wheel grinder.
It's keeping the edge, I guess, is what I'm kind of hearing. Yeah.
So you're saying don't aggressively grind.
Don't grind them. Don't grind them. Yeah, and you know,
no pun intended.
Sometimes a knife might get to the point where it's so bad that an experienced knife sharpener might want to hit it on a wheel real quick.
Uh-huh.
But it's not the kind of thing you want to do a lot of, because it just destroys the blade. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have a $300 knife with $20 worth of steel, just you ground off it.
Right.
You know, it's not good.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. So is there a proper way to clean knives?
Yeah, just don't run a knife through the dishwasher. Soaps, they'll clang around with the other cutlery, and also the soaps that they use in a dishwasher have caustic in it. So the caustic will make a little bit of a corrosion on the edge. You can't see that corrosion because it's microscopic, but if you put it under a microscope, which I have, you'll see that, you know, it gets kind of grungy. Mm. And a grungy edge of a knife that's maybe rolled over a little bit or bent or abraded, you know, it's not a sharp knife. It's just,
right.
just not sharp anymore.
Dan, for our listeners, if they're curious about how do they get their knives, what do they do? Like, say I have a 8-inch French knife or chef's knife that needs sharpening. About how much would that cost for you to work on? How long would it take you? I mean, you're at the market. You're actually sharpening knives there.
Well, and I'm doing them while they wait.
While they wait, right.
They give the knives to me when they first get into the market, and then they'll go wander through the market for a half an hour or 45 minutes or whatever. If it's going to take longer for me to sharpen their knives, occasionally I get a little backed up and I'll say, well, it's going to be an hour, hour and a half or whatever. And some people will say, well, I'm going to go to the gym and I'll be back, or just take them home and give me a call and I'll pick them up at your house.
You and know? So, do you charge by the inch, by the knife? How does it work?
My nominal charge is $1 an inch for knives.
Mm.
But that's, you give me one or two knives and I'll charge $1 an inch. But usually I discount. The more knives you give me, the more of a discount I give you. So, I don't have a schedule of discounted rates, but maybe at some point I will. But, you know, I'll just take a look at the job and I'll say, oh, these are really nice knives and they're small knives. They're you know, 8 paring knives or, well, I'm not going to charge a lot of money. I believe in being fair to a customer, and, you know, that's the way you get the people back, you know.
Well, and right. You were in the business long enough to know how to operate successfully, so that's true. You want to develop, you know, that good relationship with your customers and word of mouth. You want them to go home
sure.
and tell their friends, oh, my gosh, check this knife out. This is the sharpest.
Right.
This is so amazing.
Yeah.
So what?
I had a lady who told me that she had lent out 3 of her utility knives to, you know, there's the cook for the table. I think it's a, you know, it's through a church. They do,
oh, the
do
table.
Meals.
The table,
yes.
Yeah. They feed. They actually get free fresh produce donations from us on Tuesday. So some
yeah,
of the produce
yeah,
comes
right.
from the market. But, Dan, so I have
lady,
oh, sorry.
This lady wandered by and said, oh, I lent my knives out to 3 of my friends, and they all cut themselves. She was laughing and smiling.
Oh, no.
Well, this is the Halloween episode. So.
Yeah.
So, Dan, speaking of Halloween, Dan, what's the weirdest thing you've ever been asked to grind?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know,
I don't think we want to encourage people to bring anything
no,
to
no,
the market.
No, no, I just,
but
yeah.
Oh, I had a guy brought me a scythe.
Oh, like
for cutting wheat?
Yeah.
Like the Grim Reaper sort of thing?
It was like 100 years old, and the handle was kind of, you know, rickety in it. It was not very well, you know, it just it needed
weird.
A lot of work.
But, all right.
That was weird, but the worst, the most, what's the word, disconcerting costume I ever saw was just a regular guy who was, in, you know, maybe 30 or 35 years old with khakis on, and he was wandering through this area with a bunch of trick-or-treaters, and he was carrying an axe, dragging it on the ground.
Greg brought that up.
Well,
and I still get goosebumps.
Yeah. Last year at the market, I saw a guy walking across the market with an axe on his shoulder, and it was a big axe. It wasn't a little Collins axe. It was a great big one, and I looked up and thought, what is that guy doing? Well, he was headed straight to your stall because
yeah.
he was going to have his axe. So do you do scissors also?
Yeah, I don't do hair shears, Greg,
okay.
but, you know, because they're a little bit finicky, and some of these are very expensive. And, if I ruin a pair of scissors, I will, of course, pay for it.
Sure.
And,
but, like, we won't.
Some of these scissors are, like, $400.
But we're going to ask Bok Bok to close her ears really quick. But, you know, like chicken scissors. Or what you know, like in my kitchen, poultry shears.
Very
sorry,
easy, yeah.
Bok Bok,
yeah.
you can uncover your ears
no
now.
Yeah.
poor Bok Bok.
Well, Dan, we wanted to let you know. So on Saturday and Tuesday is going to be our haunted market. Are you going to be with us on Saturday at the market?
I'll be there Saturday.
Great.
Yeah.
So we're having a vendor costume contest. So if you come in costume, our customers are going to vote for their favorite vendor in costume. So I just wanted to make sure you're informed of that, and you can join us in our spooky fun for the haunted market.
Well, thank you. Yeah, maybe I'll
Saturday.
Just spread a bunch of ketchup on my face and hands.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Michael,
that sounds
Michael Myers
wonderful.
Hockey mask.
Creepy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dan, for being on the show. We appreciate it. We'll let you go.
Me.
Thanks so much.
It's good talking with you all. Bye, Greg.
All right, Dan.
Bye, Dan.
Thanks. Good
thank
talking
you.
To you.
Bye-bye.
So, Greg, tell us, too, what are the top knives you should have in your kitchen? Like, if you – what are the things you absolutely need to have?
So I think an 8-inch French knife, or what they call a chef's knife, but it's a French knife. 8-inch one is sort of a multi-purpose size. They come 10 inches. They come 12 inches. But an 8-inch one is kind of fine for the normal person, home cook. A nice paring knife. They don't have to be expensive. My favorite paring knife is a little Victronix paring knife. They're $8 or $9 at Shackford's. It's a plastic handle. Nothing fancy. It's just a really good all-purpose lightweight paring knife. And then a good boning knife for plug yours again, Bok Bok, but for cutting up chicken, for breaking down meat. Those I like. And those come with very firm blades or kind of flexible blades. A flexible blade is better for filleting fish. A firmer one is more of all-purpose one. And so I have a Hinkle brand boning knife that I use. And so really those three knives are really the most important three to have. And then from there you can go into slicing knives, you know, carving knives.
Sure, yeah.
smaller utility knives. I don't have any Japanese knives in my my bag of tricks. I mean, those kind of those things came in after I was already cooking and I was sort of set in my ways, and most of my knives are German made. But three knives is really all you need. And then Dan didn't talk about it. He talked about taking the piece of leather or denim, the strop, and hitting the knives with. But I have a sharpening steel.
Mm-hmm. So yep. And most people do. Many times it comes with your whole
with your
knife
set of
block.
Knives. And that's really important. And because they don't necessarily sharpen the knife, but the knife edge is sort of this microscopic layer of metals. And that will help realign them.
Right. So it helps them stand up straight, right, or something like that?
It does, yeah. So a good sharpening knife. And then it takes practice, because if your knife has a 20-degree or an 18-degree angle, and if you're hitting it on the sharpening steel at a 40-degree angle, you're working against it. So it takes a little bit of figuring out.
Some technique.
A really sharp knife drug properly across a steel, when it comes to the end, you'll hear a little ring. You'll hear a little ringing sound.
Oh, that's a good tip.
You know your knife is sharp, right, and you've got the right angle.
I'd probably lose a finger before I got to that, though.
Well, and what
so
I do, see people on TV and they're sharpening their knives, and they're holding the steel and they're taking the base of the blade and going cutting down towards their hand, and accidents happen that way.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and so I was trained in school, and I go backwards. I take the tip of the knife at the base of the steel and go away from me.
Right.
And it's much safer.
Right.
I think it works just as well. But a lot of times you'll see someone and they're taking their knife and they're aggressively working it on the steel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really isn't what the steel is designed for. The steel is more fine-tuning. So Dan could recreate your edge. Then he would hit it on a little stone just to finish it. And then that steel is sort of the final adjustment. So,
awesome.
But sharp, I mean, dull knives are really more dangerous than sharp.
And they're so boring.
They are boring, yeah.
Yeah, and they're actually hard to use. They're inefficient, actually.
They're dull, yeah.
They're
yeah.
super they're inefficient.
Yeah. They are, yeah.
All right, so enough of knives and on to NAPA Give Guide. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, American Ag Credit, Money for Agriculture. They're what keeps this show going on this beautiful station, KVON, 1440
Money
AM.
Money for Agriculture, American Ag Credit.
But we are going to be part of the NAPA Give Guide. That's huge.
Right. Yeah, the NAPA Farmers Market, we are Saturdays and Tuesdays at the South Napa Century Center from 8:30 to 1 p.m. And this week, Saturday and Tuesday, is going to be our haunted market with spooky fun. And then the following Saturday, we are having an extra special event, and we are hosting the event Give Guide Goes to the Market. So the Give Guide is a project by Napa Valley Can Do, and the Give Guide is an end-of-year charitable giving campaign to inspire a community of givers. And they have selected over 40 fabulous local nonprofits that are going to be featured in the Give Guide, which is coming out in a little magazine in the marketplace. And also the website will launch November 1st. You can go to NapaValleyGiveGuide.org. So from November 1st to December 31st, our community members are invited to check out the local nonprofits featured in the Give Guide and begin any kind of charitable giving at a $10 level and as much as they want or they can afford. So basically what the Give Guide wants to do is make it easy for people to make a choice in the way that they want to give. So what we do at the Napa Farmers Market is we offer our community space up to some of the nonprofits that want to come on down. So on Saturday, November 3rd, from 8:30 to 1 p.m., we are hosting Give Guide Goes to the Market. And, you know, I've been so busy with food days, I haven't even had a chance to really sort of check all the RSVPs. But we have, I know, over 10 RSVPs from different organizations.
That's awesome.
We have a event on Facebook. We have the event on our website calendar, which is NapaFarmersMarket.org. So stay tuned for more details there. We're going to be having more raffle prizes, mm-hmm. and The fun thing for the organizations that will be there is we're having a little contest for the organizations. So if the organization's booth gets the most visitors, then they actually win a prize. So it's kind of like a reverse raffle for them.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I think, you know, I'm going to give a plug to the Napa Farmers Market, though, more hardly here as a board member.
Put my board hat on.
But you will be able to give to the Napa Farmers Market through the Napa Give Guide, and this won't be the first time, I'm sure, that we will bring this up on the show.
so be prepared
for our ask.
And specifically, that's a great point, Tia. So we're sharing the love with the Give Guide, and we're asking our listeners and our customers and our community to give to the Napa Farmers Market using the Give Guide. And this year, we are fundraising specifically for our Market Match program. And the Market Match program is what we are able to offer our low-income families that have CalFresh, which is food assistant benefits, and they are able to come to the market and receive double the amount of money to spend on produce. And Market Match makes a huge difference for families that are struggling to eat, to get enough healthy food to eat. We've talked to one of our loyal Market Match customers, and he says for his family that without the Market Match program, he would not be able to afford to shop at the farmers market. But with the Market Match program, he is able to afford nutritious, healthy produce at the same or even a better price than the grocery store. So we want the community to know that when they see us in the Give Guide, and if they give to the farmers market, they will be directly funding the Market Match program and making sure that our low-income families have something healthy to eat.
Absolutely. Super, super important. So
we do a lot of good things at the farmers market. We create a community, a place for the community to gather and shop
right.
and socialize. We are an incubator for new businesses starting up. We're a place where farmers could take their products and craftspeople to the general public at the retail level and provide them a venue for that. But I think to me, you know, one of the greatest joys I've seen the 2 years I've been on the board is that Market Match program, is the fact that, you know, you could buy apples for less money at the grocery store, perhaps, than you can at the farmer's market. But if you go to Devoto Farms and buy a Hawaiian apple from him, you're not ever going to find that flavor, that taste, that amazing apple at the grocery store.
No.
And
it's
so,
especially for the kids, you know, who, I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't think I liked apples because we would buy apples at the grocery store mm-hmm. and they're mealy and they're mushy and they don't have much flavor. When you get orchard fresh apples organically raised from someone like Devoto Farms,
yeah.
it's like, wow, apples are amazing.
They really are. It's something
special.
So we're
providing that a way for a path for families that might not have the means to shop at the farmer's market, a chance to come.
That's right.
That's right. So we're getting winding down here. So I just want to touch on a couple more things before we have to go. Next week for Farmers Fresh Hour, we're going to be having the best of Farmers Fresh Hour show.
Oh, that's
so they're going to replay some of our favorite interviews.
Some of our award-winning segments.
Yes, exactly. So you want to listen to that. And then on November 8th, we'll welcome A4 Farms and Sweet Pea Bake Shop and possibly one other as we prepare for Thanksgiving,
wow.
which will be great.
Halloween into Thanksgiving. It's just all happening.
You know, it is the Halloween show. So I have to ask you guys, why can't scarecrows tell secrets in the farmer's garden?
I don't know. Why?
Because the corn has ears and the potatoes have eyes. And I got one more for Bok Bok. What's a haunted chicken?
What's a haunted chicken?
I don't know.
A poultry, guys.
Oh, geez, Louise. That's too funny.
Do you want one more? I can
keep
them
going. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay,
keep them coming.
Where do tough chickens come from?
I don't know.
Hard-boiled eggs.
Hard-boiled eggs.
I love hard-boiled eggs.
That is classic.
Okay, one more for the road. What do zombies call kids on skateboards?
You're stumping me again.
Meals on wheels.
Meals on wheels. That is a great one, too.
All right. Brains. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Napa.
Come on down to the Haunted Market this Saturday and Tuesday, everyone.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you there. And follow us on our newsletter at napafarmersmarket.org. Right. Until next time.
See you at the market.
Bye, Napa.
You're a farmer or rancher. Your success depends on the weather, which means certain things are out of your control, such as rain, hail, fire, crop failure, and other unforeseen conditions. But you have a business to run. Protect yourself and insure your risk with American Ag Credit, so you can rest easy knowing that we'll be there for you no matter what tomorrow brings. American Ag Credit. Money for agriculture.